Hello, hello, and welcome to Arthouse Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make arthouse, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I am your host, Andrew Sweatman, and today it's an Oscar special. Rance Collins is an expert in Oscars history, and he returns to the show today to help make sense of Sunday night's wild Oscars ceremony. Just before that, we've also got a reaction to this year's South by Southwest. Christopher Pistole was on location in Austin for the in-person festival, and he is here to share all about the festival experience and the best films he saw this year. Stick around. Nothing goes with a movie like popcorn. If you, like me, are a big fan of popcorn, then I highly recommend trying a company called OPopPop. They make flavor-wrapped popcorn kernels, so you just throw them in the microwave in the specially designed OPopPop bowl, and they pop to perfection every time. And they have flavors. The standard butter flavor is excellent, but they also have things like salty caramel, Maui heat, vanilla cake pop, and many more. Since discovering OPopPop, they've become my go-to popcorn, and that's why I decided to become an affiliate. If you want to try OPopPop and help out the podcast, go to arthousegarage.com/popcorn now and see what OPopPop has to offer. There's also a link in the show notes. I think you'll like it. Okay, back to the show. Before we get into Oscar talk, there was another significant event in the film world recently, and that is South by Southwest, the festival out of Austin, Texas that always features some very exciting new movies. The festival was back in person this year after 2 years of virtual festivals, and I've always wanted to go to South by Southwest. I haven't had the opportunity just yet, but filmmaker and friend of the show, Christopher Pistole, made the trip down to Texas a few weeks back, and he was kind enough to chat with me for just a few minutes and give a little festival report. He saw movies, he saw celebrities, and he got to see a few films that I've been dying to see. Here is my chat with Chris Pistole about South by Southwest 2022. Christopher Pistole, welcome back to the show. Thank you for being here. How are you today?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned you were going to South by Southwest, and mm-hmm. I'm always dying to know about festivals. I've never been to South by Southwest, and I saw some cool stuff was playing, so I'm anxious to hear what you got to see there. But yeah, I'm so glad this worked out to get a little festival report from you. So first of all, what is South by Southwest like? What was the festival experience like?
Well, it was a ton of fun. This was actually my first really big film festival. The only other festival I'd really been to was the Little Rock Film Festival, which is a very different experience. Yeah. I was supposed to go back in 2020, but thanks to the pandemic, that did not happen for 2 years.
Yes.
So I was super glad that we got the opportunity to go. Very exciting. Lots to do. So the festival is kind of spread around multiple locations in downtown Austin. Okay. Austin, Texas. So there's like the main Paramount Theater, which has a lot of the bigger screenings, a lot of the premiere stuff will play at this really big and old theater in downtown Austin. And then the Alamo Draft House, which is kind of a bigger theater that has food. It's kind of like a restaurant. I'm sure a lot of listeners know what the Alamo Draft House.
I've been to one in Dallas a couple times and love
big,
it.
Yeah. Big fan of that chain. They're very unique and big movie fans. And then a couple other areas that they have different events at, but most of the screenings happen at those two locations.
Very cool. How many days were you there?
I was there 3 full days, I want to say. 3 or 4 full days. It's all a blur now because there's 2 days on a bus pretty much. Spending all day driving there and driving back. It was a lot of food. Not as many movies as I was hoping. You know, what my dream is to be able to go to a festival and literally just watch movies all day long. But kind of how it's set up is that, you know, you really have to kind of strategically pick what you absolutely want to try to go to. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get those early access passes, you have to get there really early. And sometimes that can mean waiting like an hour or two to get into a movie. So. But it was a ton of fun. Saw some great movies. Saw some celebrities.
Yeah, well, I was about to ask about movies, but what celebrities did you see? I guess, is that connected to the movies that you saw?
Like, yeah, it's definitely connected to the movies. Okay. The Lost City was playing, and I actually did not go see that. I was like, that's kind of seems fun, but I think I'd catch that later.
Yeah.
And then Daniel Radcliffe just showed up for that one, and it was kind of like, oh, that would have been worth going to just for that.
Oh, that's cool. Well, how many films did you see while you were there?
I saw maybe around two features a day, and then a block of shorts, a couple of shorts. But I was able to check out some couple indie films and some stuff that's coming up, hopefully that will be big on the horizon.
Well, what about the features? Maybe you can go from like, save the best for last, maybe.
Okay. If I'm going to save the best for last, I saw the Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which is the Nicolas Cage film. It's coming out soon. So this is a movie in which Nicolas Cage kind of plays a version of himself with Pedro Pascal.
Yes, yes.
Pedro Pascal plays this sort of millionaire who's an avid Nicolas Cage fan, and he invites him out to his island for his birthday. And Nicolas Cage is playing sort of this version of himself that's different obviously from who he really is, but there's some kind of funny little inside jokes into I think his real kind of persona, and that he is hasn't been an A-list movie star in a while, but is struggling financially, so he ends up taking this this gig going out to this guy's island. And I think if you've seen the trailer, it gives away a little bit more of the plot, but I kind of want to leave it at that, because there are some like little twists and turns to it. It was a really, really funny movie, I thought. Definitely heightened the experience of seeing it with a large crowd of what I can only assume were many rabid Nicolas Cage fans who were literally just like chomping at the bits at every line of dialogue, like every Nicolas Cage reference. It,
probably. Yeah.
It really was. It was kind of like, it was the only thing I can sort of describe it as is going to like a stand-up show, like at the Apollo or something like that. Just like a room full of people who are just kind of feeding on that energy and literally cool. like applauding every 10 minutes or so. But yeah, I think if you're a Nicolas Cage fan, it's definitely caters to you. It's definitely going to, I think, be an enjoyable experience. And I did think it was a really funny movie on its own right. If I had just watched it kind of by myself, I would have still, I think, enjoyed it.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, that's one it's been on my radar. So I'm glad to hear you enjoyed it pretty well. So if I can catch that one myself pretty soon.
Yes, Nicolas Cage was there.
He was there. So there was Q&A for that. And Nicolas Cage, who else was there for that?
Nicolas Cage was there. The director was there. I think most of the cast was there. Pedro Pascal
was there. Nice.
Was there. Yeah. Really and cool. Nicolas Cage did most of the talking through the Q&A. he's so charming and likable and very self-deferential as well, or very self-deprecating. So you know, he was saying when he first heard the sort of premise of this movie of playing a version of himself, he was like, God, no, I don't want to do that. But then after he kind of read the script and talked to the director, he was very intrigued by certain elements of the film, and decided he wanted to do it to sort of challenge himself.
Nice. And then one more, and I think I know what movie you're going to talk about.
Yes. So got to save the best for last. And this happened to be the first film of the festival as a whole. So this was the first night we were there, but this is the new film from Daniels, Everything Everywhere All at Once. So the energy for this one is definitely starting to build momentum, which is really exciting, because I think this movie pretty much blew everybody at the festival away. You know, Daniels are these two guys named Daniel Scheinhardt and Daniel Kwan. They are the weirdos behind Swiss Army Man.
I love that movie too.
The farting corpse movie, some people refer to it as. Everything Everywhere All at Once is kind of a very, again, very sort of existential you know, bizarre sort of concept. It revolves around this concept of the multiverse, which I think multiverses are really hot right now. Everybody seems to be doing multiverse stories. But it's essentially about this, you know, Asian family, this older woman played by Michelle Yeoh and her husband played by Jonathan Ke Kwan, and then their daughter, and they own a laundromat, and they're being audited by Jamie Lee Curtis. And the kind of, while they're at the auditing office, essentially, the multiverse sort of interrupts their, you know, mundane sort of day-to-day goings on. And there's mystery and danger within this multiverse. And our kind of main character, played by Michelle Yeoh, starts to tap into all of these sort of benefits of all these different versions of herself throughout time and space. So it's a very strange concept for a film, but very unique. It's hard to really kind of, you know, pin this movie down. It's an action movie. It's a, you know, a bizarro kind of comedy, but it's also extremely heartfelt. I teared up at the end of this movie. It's a really kind of beautiful story about family and about connecting and sort of about, you know, family trauma that gets passed on from generation to generation. You know, it's a big film, with lots of themes and strangeness to it.
That's interesting to hear, because that was my experience with Swiss Army Man too. It was like, I didn't expect this to be so emotional, and like the drama really works, and it goes to like a bigger kind of humanistic place almost. I wondered if that was the case here too. So yes, I'm very excited. Actually, I thought that came out recently. I think it did come out recently in limited release, but it's not here yet. So hopefully,
It's playing
a couple more weeks
before
it comes to Little Rock area.
Yeah, this is definitely, but it's definitely a sort of once in a every few years type of movie. I think this is definitely going to be in my top five for the end of the year. And we'll see where that ends up. But
were filmmakers there for Q&A on that one?
Yeah, the directors were there, and Michelle Yeoh was there. Jamie Lee Curtis was there. James Hong is also in this movie. He wasn't there, but he did like a little video message for everybody. Jonathan Ke Kwan was there. And Jonathan Ke Kwan, I just want to highlight, because he might be the best part of the movie.
Really,
he really steals the show as the Michelle Yeoh's husband. And I couldn't place him for the first few minutes of the movie. I was like, why does this actor feel so familiar? And then it like just dawned on me, like, oh, that's Short Round.
Yes. Yeah. That's
wild. Data.
Yep.
And apparently this is his first film in like 20 years.
Yeah.
So
wow,
that's great that he's back.
Well, that is very exciting. I'm really excited for that film, and have been since, because it was supposed to play South by Southwest maybe last year or something. I think it's been delayed. I want to say that it's been in the works and has been delayed for a bit. So
yeah, they shot it 2 years ago at the screening. So
yes. Well, that is really cool. So overall, South by Southwest sounded like it was a fun time. I'm going to try to make myself, make my way out there sometime, maybe next year or in the next few years. But thanks so much for sharing your festival experience with the podcast. And always appreciate your insights.
Absolutely.
I loved hearing all about South by Southwest from Chris. I decided to keep that conversation short because I know most listeners came here for the Oscar stuff coming shortly. If you do want to hear more about South by Southwest, Chris and I actually spoke a little bit more about the festival than what you just heard, and that full extended conversation is available to our patrons over on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can sign up now and get access to all of our bonus content. That includes ad-free podcast episodes, uncut and extended podcast interviews like the chat with Chris, bonus episodes, and video versions of most of the interviews I do here on the show. Speaking of bonus episodes, I've got a few of those coming to the Patreon feed very soon. I often do a segment called What Have You Been Watching Lately, in which me and a guest chat about whatever films and TV we've seen recently, and it's one of my very favorite podcast segments to record. And that's exactly what these bonus episodes are. I've got one with Chris. We talked about some TV, including Severance, The After Party, and Pam and Tommy. And then I also did one recently with Omaya Jones, another frequent podcast guest. We talked about the new A24 film, X, the new Pixar film, Turning Red, and Omaya also explains his grand plan to fix the Oscars. It's a really good chat, and I think you'll enjoy it, and it's dropping into the Patreon very soon. Okay, enough about that, but if you are interested, go to patreon.com/arthousegarage or find that link in the show notes. And now the moment you've been waiting for. I've got Oscars expert and friend of the show, Rance Collins, back once again to break down the 2022 Oscars ceremony. We talk winners and losers, speeches, outfits, and of course we talk about the slap. If you are unfamiliar with Rance, he is a walking encyclopedia of classic Hollywood information. He has worked for Turner Classic Movies, and he co-hosts his own podcast all about the Oscars called The Envelope, Please. Check that out at the link in the show notes below. And without further ado, here is my chat with Rance Collins about the 2022 Academy Awards. Welcome back to the podcast, Rance Collins. It's been a while. How you been?
It has been a while. I think it hasn't been since the last Oscars. We've talked since then, have we?
Yes. You came on for, we did a couple in classic film things with Technicolor after the Oscars last year.
And yes, then we did, yes.
The Citizen Kane movie. No, wait, that was before last year's
Oscars. That was before the Oscars. So maybe, I don't know. Time
yeah.
is relative these right. days. Yeah. And yes.
Yikes. Well, we are going to talk about the Oscars. If anyone doesn't know Rance, you talk a lot about Oscars history and Oscars everything. So very glad to have you on. Always check out your podcast. Everyone listening should listen. It's called The Envelope, Please. They're talking through Best Picture winners. What year are you up to now?
We just dropped 1999, which is American Beauty. Right. And we had an interview with the producer of that movie, Dan Jenks.
Yes, I haven't listened to that yet, but I saw that on your, yes. on your Twitter. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Very, very honored to have him on. Yeah.
That's great. Well, yes, everyone check that out. American Beauty, what an interesting film. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. Let's talk about tonight's Oscars because it was unexpected. A show.
But it's not the winners, I don't think. The winners were not the shocking part of the show.
Actually, I was looking through the winners, like none of these really are very surprising. Like,
no, there wasn't anything predicted. Super left field, but
go ahead.
Yes. I'm assuming let's not just dive right into the meat. Let's build up anticipation.
Just before we get to the big thing that everyone's talking about at this point, I've been glued to Twitter. But just generally, the format of the show, the ceremony itself, how did you feel about it, especially as someone who has, studied the Oscars a whole lot, and maybe comparing to last year, which was so different and all those kinds of things?
This was a much better show than last year, first of all. Last year's show felt very disjointed and didn't feel like it was really paying homage to the films to me, and it had a almost complete lack of humor, which I think we very much, especially in these days, as this was expressed by several people, we need levity. I thought this show did a good job of reminding us why entertainment is important, even in times where there's so much more serious stuff happening. Entertainment is a vessel for us to feel and express emotion, and it's also an opportunity for us to take a breath in really trying times. And I thought I thought the three hosts did a really, really good job. I mean, there were a lot of points I laughed out loud. And I thought, Amy Schumer's moment where after the incident, where she was like, did anything happen while I was gone? It was just like, that was something that they had to think up on the spot. What the previous few minutes after that did not do, Amy Schumer was able to reset that moment. And that's not an easy thing to do. And I thought Wanda Sykes was funny. I liked the bit where they were all in the different costumes, and I really liked the three of them at the beginning. It was like the perfect, like, awkward banter. Regina Hall's entire situation where she was giving the COVID the test was pretty funny.
Yeah.
You know, I thought in general there was a lot of laughs, and I was glad to have that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think Regina Hall actually of the three was kind of MVP for me. Like that whole bit was really funny. I don't know. She just kind of nailed the comedic timing. It's like a weird sort of comedic timing because it's not exactly stand up, but it's like not exactly, you know, it's definitely different than acting in a movie. But I just thought she seemed like a natural. I was like, we should have her back because that was really good. All three of them I thought were really funny though too. Yeah.
I thought all of them, each of them on their own could have held the show. Yeah. Like they didn't need to be a team. It was nice to have a team, but after the show was over, I found myself thinking like, oh, I wish I had seen more of them. And that's exactly what you want.
Yeah.
And to host. Think with a host. Yeah. Yes. Very, you don't want to feel like you saw too much of them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So I'm very glad we have return host. Also, they did something completely different with the In Memoriam this year.
Yes. And I at first ask I you about that because
yes, I'm a big In Memoriam guy. And at first I was a little like, I don't know, I don't know how I feel about people singers performing during In Memoriam, because I feel like sometimes that can detract. But I thought that what they did is they turned it into like a life celebration using the choir.
Mm-hmm.
And it made, I love the way they took three of the very important people who died last year and had actors come out and say a word about this person they had worked with. It felt like it made us understand why that art is important. And I thought Jamie Lee Curtis bringing a little dog with her was super, super cute.
Yeah.
You know, I like that they led with Sydney Poitier and ended with Betty White, right?
Yeah, there's a few names after Betty White, but she was the last featured one. Yeah.
She was the last featured one. I forget who the last name was.
Yeah, I can't remember
either. It was a big person too. But, you know, a lot of people, Betty White is the first lady of television, but in her renaissance of the last like 20 years of her life, she made a lot of really fun appearances in movies, and she did make some movies earlier, but I like that. I think people like Sydney Poitier and Betty White kind of remind us that there are ways that we still intersect even with all the people we disagree with, because everybody can agree they're awesome. So
that's a really good point. I'm trying to remember who they ended on too. I think I was still reeling because that came directly after the big drama, and so like I was, you know, I was on Twitter and trying to watch this thing too. But yeah, I felt the same way about the dancing stuff at first. I was like, I don't know about this, but then I was like, actually, I think I like this. Then I saw a lot of people on Twitter who didn't, and I was like, I'm very curious what Rance thinks, but I liked it as well.
It came together. It like that when the element came in, I was like, is this going to detract? But I was very happy. You never missed a name.
Yeah.
They didn't get away from that. So I just thought it was, I thought it was a really, really great In Memoriam segment, and I appreciate them taking a new direction with it. Yeah. And it was much better than last year's PowerPoint.
Yeah. I was trying to remember how that went last year, but I remember you weren't a fan. That's what I remember the most of it. Oh, yeah, just it was really names fast.
Flashing. Right,
way too quick.
And we're
just trying to cut
and it looked like it was thrown together. Yeah. And they did something this year that made it to where even if you weren't like a quote unquote In Memoriam, like a person who's weird like me, then you could appreciate it because they contextualized what you were watching, which is honestly what the Oscars is good. They take the art of making a movie and they make it accessible to people. They make people appreciate it. And this year did much more in the way of that than
last year.
Last year.
That's actually a good transition, because I also wanted to ask you about the categories that were cut. And that was such a controversial thing, you know, leading up to this, that there several were not filmed live, or they were, you know, that happened in the afternoon or the hours preceding. And then they showed clips of that kind of pretty seamlessly, actually. I was kind of impressed by that. But what do you think about that whole situation?
I thought that okay. It was not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's how I felt too.
Because I was very against this. And then I thought they did a good job of making it still feel like it was happening live.
Mm-hmm. We even had live reactions to it, because I think they were watching it on the screen during the ceremony. So we had like,
yes,
here's everyone like watching it at the same time as us. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it was done in a way that still felt like it was honoring those people.
Mm-hmm.
I will say there was a lot in the show that kind of felt long, and you wonder where.
Yeah.
I mean, the show, and it didn't cut the show down in length at all.
Yeah. It was longer, yeah, than last year.
So it was, I think that was in Kevin Costner was at least 20 minutes of it. Yeah. So you gotta wonder if we could have trimmed in some other places and still had that extra 2 minutes we cut with those things, you know, I mean,
yeah,
but I'm glad that it didn't feel like an edit, like a clip package.
Yeah. Yeah. I was gonna say like when the first one happened, I almost didn't realize it at first. I was like, oh, that was one of those cut things. And it's like, okay, that was pretty good. I do think that, you know, it still feels second class in a way because, of all of that, which I hate that they had to. What I understand is that was more of an ABC decision than it was the showrunners. I think maybe that's not accurate, but
it feels to me like a network decision. Yeah. You gotta wonder: is ABC has Hulu, ABC has Disney Plus. I do not understand why this doesn't stream simultaneously.
Yeah. I had to create a new Google account and get my YouTube TV free trial. That's how I always end up doing this, because I don't have, because even like we have a Dish thing, but it doesn't, ABC live stream doesn't work on it for some reason.
Probably a contract thing. It's probably that ABC network is like, no, this is ours. Yeah. You can't have it. Mm-hmm. I think that people talk about solving the ratings problem. Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you make this available via streaming? You can still, I mean, you could probably end up charging. I mean, like they'd have to figure out the financials of it all and how the commercial revenue would get split and all that. But people would watch it, and they'd watch it with commercials if you made it more accessible. I really think
look at March Madness. Like everyone's streaming March Madness on their smart TVs, and that's going great. Like they're getting revenue and everything. So
it's working fantastic. But I'm sure that's something, it has something to do with the fact that the contract's with ABC, and ABC probably doesn't want to relinquish their exclusivity to that. So
probably true.
Anyway,
only other thing I was going to say about that is, so you lose like the people walking up to the stage, which, you know, that takes time, but it's nice to see people reacting to the news that they won. That's kind of cool. So we kind of lose that.
I enjoy that moment.
And then there's also like, so I think we kind of lost this last year, but we had it this time with the acting categories, at least, where you get like a pretty good clip of the movie and we see them acting. I was like, oh, now we can appreciate their acting and then, you know, actually see them in the film before we see who wins. I really like that. And with the previous years,
last year, where they just described their performances instead of showing them.
Right. Yeah. I remember they didn't show it.
Like you're not getting people to watch a movie that way, which the whole purpose of the Oscars is to get people to watch movies. I mean, goodness. And I thought this one did a great job of the clip packages really, really helped. Excuse me.
It's late post-Oscars.
Did Kevin Costner leave? That was another moment of the show that I feel like we have to bring up. I read a tweet that was something like, Kevin Costner is trying to hypnotize us so we'll forget, but we won't forget. I mean, I appreciate it. I've actually seen How the West Was Won at the Cinerama Dome in Los Angeles. So he was talking about that, and I was like, that's a shared experience, just many years apart.
That's really cool.
You know, that's a Cinerama movie. So it was filmed with three cameras and three projectors. But he just like went on and on and on and on and on. And I really liked, I know. And then I really liked that Jane Campion said that was a very dramatic
introduction.
There were a few speeches that were a little rambly tonight. But
Yeah. The only other thing I was going to say was, so like we got those acting clips, which is nice, but then with the pre-recorded things, we then lose that for those, because that's something I always liked too in previous years, not last year, but previous years, like, oh, here's a film editing award, and we kind of like get a little editing like thing. So like, it kind of shows off the job of editing or of sound. And like maybe we see the sound mixers, or we see like some visual representation of their job. I would really like that too. And so that's lost as well in the way they did it this year.
It's interesting. For whatever reason, I thought makeup and hairstyling was going to be one of the clip ones. I thought that had been announced, and that one was live.
I thought it was.
And no, I mean, like, think of we saw her get up and we watched her leave the stage, and they had the whole intro into makeup and hairstyling.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I'm gonna have to go back and watch it again. I guess I missed that.
I mean, like, they made that one felt like there was more reverence for the art. Not makeup and hairstyling. I'm so wrong. Costume design is what meant to say.
Yes, they did. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
because I remember and with that makeup, Jessica Chastain was right there, but I was like, that was a pre-recorded, like, hello. But
was pre-recorded. That category wouldn't go right before best actress in a normal show either. So,
but yes, the costume one got it all its time.
I liked most of the song performances. I thought Billie Eilish did a good job on the song, to the point where she sold it in a way that you understood why it won when it won.
Yeah.
It also probably, it would have sucked to have Lin-Manuel get his EGOT and then not be there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
I think if they had nominated We Don't Talk About Bruno, I think it probably would have won.
Yeah.
I'm really confused as to why.
I think that with Disney just did not expect the things about Encanto that work to work. Like, they're like, I've seen Encanto a bajillion times, and they made jokes about that.
Obviously.
Like, all the parents have seen this. So
you have children.
But like, they didn't want Luisa, the big strong sister, to be big. But like, man, the animators had to fight for that to happen. And so like, just different things like that. Like, they didn't think Bruno was going to be the huge song, and now it's like the biggest song in the world.
It was number one on the Billboard charts, which I mean, hardly ever happens with that type of song, with a kid's song.
Quite have the faith in the aspects of it that they needed to, or something. I love the song that was nominated too, but yeah, Bruno is the banger, obviously.
But I mean, Bond is getting a really good track record at the original, because this is the third one in a row that won
best original song.
Skyfall, Writing on the Wall from Spectre, and now No Time to Die. Yeah. And that is I like, you know, they're brother and sister. So that's kind of,
That was a cool,
that's cool.
Cool performance and everything.
It's the happiest I've ever seen, Billie Eilish, you know, her songs are always so emo, you know, when she was on SNL, you know, her personality is, she was, I don't know if you watch SNL,
I do sometimes, but I haven't seen that one.
She was one of the best hosts I thought they've had this season. So I was very, very happy for her. She seems to really have a good head on her shoulders. And sound like such an old man now. Now when I talk about people who are 20 years old, I'm like, they seem to have a really good head on their shoulders.
No, but seriously, she and Phineas both. And Phineas did the music. Actually, I think they both did the music for this new Pixar movie that I've also seen a million times, Turning Red. And the music is so good in it.
But is he older than her? I don't know. Age difference is. I don't know who's younger or older.
My wife could tell us, but she's not in the room at the moment.
I mean, again, that generation, they all look the same age to me. I don't know.
We're getting too old, Reds.
When did we get into our 30s? I'm trying to think if there's anything else in the show that, I mean, I'm really, yeah. I've wanted Jessica Chastain to win since I saw Tammy Faye. I thought she was, I thought she took what could have been an over the top campy performance and made it really real and human. That is not easy to do.
I completely agree. I think some people do think it is that. And I agree with you that I think it's much more grounded than that. And I really, really like that film a lot.
Well, I don't think people understand how easy it is to take something that has been parodied and imitated on things like SNL, take a character that is larger than life and make it into
something real.
Something real and grounded, and I mean, like, I also am all for making sure that we write the narrative of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker so that people know that Tammy Faye is not Jim.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I thought it was an excellent performance. I thought all of the best actors' performances were great. Actually, this I would have been happy with any of them.
That was my one, like, all these would be great. Yeah.
I would have been happy with any of them.
Really quick, I have to brag. You always get to brag about the cool films you get to do in LA. So I'll brag that Jessica Chastain came to Arkansas and screened Tammy Faye, and I got to see her and ask her a question at the Q&A, and that was really cool. That doesn't happen very often in central Arkansas here where I live, so I had to throw that in there.
That is so...
It was great.
I mean, but I mean, I love the way... The other reason I'm happy she won, I'm sure you've seen some of these stories about how she like sent flowers to all the other nominees, how she didn't do the she went into and watched the winners that they did before the show. She went off the red carpet and went into the venue and did and watched the show and didn't stay on the red carpet for that period, which, you know, that takes away a lot of camera time, face time for her to do that, you know? I think she's just a very, and she has made great movies and given great performances for a long time now. But I honestly, I'm glad that she didn't just win because she hasn't won before. She won for what I think is probably her best performance to date. So, and she was an early favorite and then kind of went out of the conversation for a while swooped back in. I think that Kristen Stewart will have her day because I think she is a really great actress. I think Nicole
too.
I'd love for both Nicole Kidman and Penelope Cruz to get second Oscars somewhere down the line because I think they're both multi-award winning contenders. If Nicole Kidman had been nominated for the AMC commercial, I think she probably would have won.
I saw a funny tweet. It's like they should have opened the show with a live reenactment of the AMC commercial.
I don't know why that didn't get a single reference. Maybe they thought that only I think there's enough people who are AMC moviegoers that they would have gotten that reference because for my here in LA, I got to tell you, there are so many AMC theaters now. It seems like they bought up everything.
Everyone sees it all the time.
Where I live, I'm not kidding. There is the one I don't normally go is just a 5-screen little like 21 plus theater called the AMC 5. And I go there most of the time, but on the other direction, I got an AMC 14 at the Grove, which is the big shopping center. And then about 3 miles that way, I have an AMC 16. And then about 3 miles the other direction, I have an AMC 18. And then there's another AMCs. One in Burbank. They're everywhere. There's so many AMCs and I have the
A-list thing or whatever.
A-list thing. And so I go fairly frequently. Just went to go see Sandy Bullock, and
I saw you posting with that. I saw that as well.
Yeah, Lost because City, it's a mid-level budget movie. I want people to go see things that aren't
support those things
that aren't comic book movies, so that they'll make more of them. But now it's gotten to the point where the audiences I go to these movies with, when Nicole comes on, they cheer.
That's so funny.
People quote certain parts of it.
Heartbreak feels with her in a place like this.
Yes, she so does. Good. You know, we talked about all the accents in House of Gucci. Nicole Kidman goes through every accent that she gives in her performances in that commercial. Because when she hits the words, because here they are, she says it with an American accent. Right, that's after so being, it's just like Nicole Kidman is a treasure and a goddess, and we are lucky to be living in a time where she welcomes us to every movie.
Well, it's so funny because actually I only first saw it for the first time last week. So we have one AMC here and it's the farthest one from me. I'd seen it online because I'd seen like everyone was like, what is this Nicole Kidman thing? So yes, now I've finally experienced it firsthand just in time for the Oscars last week. Well, do we have anything else about the ceremony itself before we talk about specific moments? And I think we have to kind of lead with the big one here.
Let's unpack this. So Okay. So as I said, I had a few people over. There were like eight of us here. And we, you know, we've been commenting throughout the show. We were actually a little behind live because some of my friends were late and they didn't want to miss anything. So we just like turned off. None of us were looking at our phones, you know, because we didn't want to get any news before. So I noticed that I was getting a few texts on my phone. I was like, what just happened? But they knew I was on tape delay. It was like, let me know when you get to Chris Rock. And I was like, what's going to happen with Chris Rock? Yeah. And then it happened. And I thought when Will Smith went up there to the podium, I thought he stage slapped him.
I thought so too. Initially.
And I thought that was like a joke. And then when the bleeping started,
and didn't stop, I was like, for so long.
It was stopped for so long and the bleeping stopped and it was still silent. And I was like, oh no, what happened? Okay. And then a friend texted me the unedited audio that leaked online. That was from like, I believe a Japanese telecast. Yeah. That's where they got it from. Mm-hmm. Cause there's translating going on during it. There was a lot of backstory I was not aware of.
Yeah. I've kind of learned as much as I can from Twitter in the last hour.
So I feel like we should probably mention all of that because I feel like that's fair.
You mean try and recap it all and you just tell me if I miss anything?
Recap and then we'll...
So what happened this evening, Chris Rock made a joke about Jada Pinkett Smith and her short hair. And it seemed in poor taste anyway. I did not know at the time that she has alopecia and has like been open and vocal about this as an advocacy thing. So double in poor taste because of that. And then realizing and learning that he had made a joke about her in particular a couple years ago as well. That was rude and in poor taste. It was she was boycotting the Oscars because of Oscars So White, and he said in his monologue.
And this is before she was boycotting it before the movement happened. I feel like that we should mention that. So she was a frontliner on that. Give her credit.
He said his joke was, "You can't boycott something you weren't invited to." So like, it was mean. It was very mean. And so now
he said it was like me boycotting Rihanna's panties. That's what he actually said.
I forgot about that part. I'm sorry. It's not funny. Yeah. It's
a
turn of phrase.
I mean, it is
it's very witty, but in poor taste.
It's in poor taste. It was a witty line. It is in poor taste. Chris Rock is a very funny guy. He makes jokes that are funny.
So you knowing can imagine, that context. Yeah, you can imagine the fury that might come up when he does it again. Yeah.
I did not remember that previous joke. I did not know that Jada Pinkett Smith had that condition. And Will Smith laughed at first, which is what I thought. And I thought she was rolling her eyes to play along. I thought we were just making a joke about the fact that Demi Moore is bald in G.I. Jane. Isn't it Demi Moore, right?
I think that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can fact check this real quick.
And so I didn't think there was any. And so we're just like, nah, G.I. Jane, 90s movie. I'm betting that Chris Rock probably did not know that Jada Pinkett Smith had that condition. I'm hoping he didn't, because I feel like nobody would make that joke in that context if they knew that, which is why, and it's that reason why I feel that, well, I don't think violence is ever the answer.
Right.
I don't support anyone going up on stage and just hitting someone point blank.
Yeah.
If he had just yelled out, "Don't talk about my wife," or something, that maybe that would have been a little bit different. But I don't think a wrong should be met with a wrong.
Right. Yeah.
That's my personal opinion on it. But I also, I understand that in the heat of a moment, when there's someone you love who has just been hurt, why you might react strongly. I still, you know, hitting someone was the wrong move. I don't know what to say here, though, because I mean, it's not like Will Smith has a history of this type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's not the type of guy who seems like he would normally go there. So there might have been a lot more to this than we know.
Yes, that's very true, too. Yeah. And I'm hesitant to, like, you know, take a side, and not that anyone needs us to take sides on this issue. But it is. Yeah, I definitely see both sides of it where, yeah, like, violence never cool, like not the way to handle a situation like that. Obviously Chris Rock was out of line as well, and I've seen a lot of discourse on Twitter about it, and what I can say, my personal experience of it, was it made me deeply uncomfortable, and I couldn't shake it for the rest of the ceremony. Like, on one hand, the joke that Chris Rock made is like, what amazing TV this is. Yeah, where everyone's talking about this for sure. At the same time, does it cheapen the overall ceremony? We're supposed to be gathered here for cinema and all of that. I don't know.
We come to this place for magic.
Exactly.
Because we need that. Where, you know, that would have been the moment for Nicole to come in. I'm just saying, had Nicole started the commercial right then.
Right there, yeah. I think what is interesting about it, and I'm processing this on the fly, so this may be nonsense, but just like, I think 10 years ago, we would have rushed to, you know, cancel someone in this situation. But I think we, maybe as a society, or at a place where we can say, okay, no one's actions here were good. Does this make them terrible people overall? Maybe that's a more complex issue, and we're not going to maybe snap to a quick judgment. I don't know, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like history has shown us that Will Smith seems to be a decent dude.
Right.
Which
was Harvey Weinstein, I mean, like, or something, right? This would be a very different situation. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, Chris Rock is a comedian, so there's always been jokes here that have landed and not landed. But I mean, I don't think that Chris Rock was one of my favorite Oscar hosts of the last couple like decade or so, you know. So I'm not picking a side on this one. I will say the discomfort really is the story for me, because Lupita Nyong'o behind Will Smith, I feel like she probably knew she was on camera and was like, I don't know what face to make. You could see the and then, like, there were certain people, you could see it in every face that they cut to. Like, nobody knew what to think. Nobody knew how to react. And then that same discomfort kind of just extended until I think Amy Schumer made the joke of it. I think that brought some love. Yeah, but Will Smith's speech too was very uncomfortable, because I couldn't,
whole thing.
Because he was like, I sensed the message I think he was trying to get across, and then it was also made even more awkward with the little preemption that was like happening.
Their little cutting back and forth to the Williams family had a technical difficulty or something, and it was like,
well, a friend of mine thought there might have been an accidental somebody might have had a wardrobe malfunction. Yeah, because and that might have been, I'm sure we'll find out the reason. I think it was just unfortunate timing.
Yeah,
that technical difficulty was happening in that moment, because I think it heightened the "is Will Smith okay" conversation.
Yeah,
that's probably what Twitter was saying at the time. I just said I wasn't watching it live, so I was staying away from Twitter. I think we were watching him kind of process it in real time, and that's a very uncomfortable position to be in. I mean, I couldn't look away, but
I was gonna say riveting stuff, but I was like, what's gonna happen? And he did specifically say he apologized to the Academy and whatever, so I was like, is he gonna say sorry? And he did pretty much, but he wasn't the most clear about it too, like, and then
he'll be invited back.
Yeah, and that's some of the stuff I was seeing on Twitter, was like, okay, we're gonna excuse this kind of behavior by saying you're a protector, by saying the devil got you or whatever, like that.
It's not you always go with the flat up. I mean, like, I understand what he was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've learned in the last few years, you always go with the flat apology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm hoping we'll hear something from Chris Rock too. I don't think we've heard the end of this story. There's going to be more context and more postlude probably happening from all sides of the argument.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, that was, I mean, that's going to be one of those moments though, just mm-hmm. like the streaker, saying La La Land instead mm-hmm. of Moonlight. Mm-hmm. Faye Dunaway is sitting somewhere right now. Like, thank God my moment's not the one they're going to talk about anymore.
Not the last one.
Something has uncrowned my moment as the most awkward in Oscar history. So, this one feels bigger to me though, because I feel like there are, like that one was more like, I don't want to say fun because I know that was tough for all those La La Land people. That was like an oopsie gaffy thing. This felt very personal and like it was hitting a lot of things that I don't know if I'm qualified to talk about. So
yes. Yeah. And I do imagine there's going to be more and more conversation around it in the coming days. We're recording this literally an hour after it happened. So yes, there's much more discourse around this, I'm sure, to come. Well, should we talk about the other things we really liked about the ceremony? Other favorite moments or just moments that are significant?
I'm trying to like go through my head here. Let's see.
I have a couple of a short list of my favorite things. I was like, okay,
go ahead.
Because I was taking notes and I was like, okay, all I can think about is Will Smith. What did I actually write down here? I liked that it opened with, you know, Williams sisters and then Beyonce. I thought that was a cool performance live, but offsite. I guess it seemed like in Compton, which was cool on the tennis court there. And then just Ariana DeBose. Go ahead.
And then I believe the yellow was to represent, like, I was saying, do you think that was supposed to be like the tennis ball? That was what I was wondering, if they were yellow on purpose.
Yeah,
I mean, they obviously were yellow on purpose. I'm just trying to
set, and then all yellow outfits too. Yeah, it was visually striking for sure.
It was a visually interesting a choice, and a great live performance. I love the fact that they performed the songs during the ceremony, because mm-hmm. there'd been years where they're like, we're just gonna get rid of these, and I think they understood that we like to watch
mm-hmm.
performances. So I'm glad that they were all given their, except Van Morrison, who was unable to come to the ceremony. So
I forgot about that one. And then they gave us an extra song too with the Bruno song, which I thought they were gonna, you know, as we're so concerned about the time length of the show, I was like, I thought we were gonna have a mashup with both Encanto songs in one or something like that. But and they gave it a big old moment, which I enjoyed it again.
They were only worried about the length of the show with things that they thought people wouldn't want to watch that didn't have celebrities involved. And apparently they think everybody wants to watch Kevin Costner talk for 5 minutes. I mean, like, maybe they didn't realize he was going to read the speech with so much gravitas and pausing, but obviously they have not seen The Last of the Mohicans, which is a very long film. So, you know, but I do, all respect to Mr. Costner. You do make good movies. So
yes. And it was Beyonce, and then it was straight into supporting actress, and Ariana DeBose won for West Side Story. So deserved. I was so glad that she won, and it seemed like everyone, you know, knew she was going to, but I thought her speech was really good. That was one of my favorite speeches of the night, actually. And she talked about, you know, being an openly queer person. Like, she said, imagine this little girl in the back of the car, you know, listening to whatever music. I can't remember what she said exactly, but like, now an openly queer and Afro-Latina actor winning and getting through the rough times because of art, or something along those lines. She said it
was such a wonderful, and we should note something here. This is a very important win mm-hmm. in history, beyond being an Afro-Latina.
I think energy this say, yeah.
And the second Latina period to mm-hmm. win an Oscar mm-hmm. for acting, maybe all categories, including actually, mm-hmm. because I believe I could be wrong on that factually, but I believe Rita Moreno was the only one
mm-hmm.
only Latina who had won an acting Oscar to this point.
Wow.
I know, which is insanity. Yeah. But Ariana DeBose is also the first openly LGBTQ plus person to win an acting award, which significantly, there have been actors who have come out after winning. Joel Grey, I believe, is the earliest name. There's also someone else who won two Oscars who came out later, but we're not going to talk about him.
I don't know who it is. I'm curious, but
you know who it is. He won two and he got canceled.
I see.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I know who it is. Yeah, we're good.
Yes. He's just one of the usual suspects, you know.
Okay.
Yes. And we've had actors win for playing queer characters, but they were not queer. Right. So this is a huge step forward for several different communities. And I do like the centricity? Well, sure. of two actresses winning for playing Anita.
Yeah, that's another interesting factoid about that is that my brother was texting me about it, but I think it's only the third time that two people have won for the same character. So there's that. Let's see if I can remember the other two. The Godfather with Vito Corleone.
Which was not that's a sequel, not a remake. So it's a little bit
different. But same two actors for the same character. Regardless whether it's a remake or a sequel. And then there's one other that I can't recall at the moment, but I'm going to look really fast.
Yes. There's some other interesting ones. Like, I think multiple people have won for playing...
Oh, here's the other one. Joaquin Phoenix and Heath Ledger both won for the Joker, playing the Joker in very, very different iterations of that character. But
oh, yes.
Yeah.
And actually, I think they're technically not even the same. Yeah, that would be a debate because I don't think they're playing the same person.
Same like
in those two
alter ego. Right.
Yeah. The same alter ego. This is a rare one. We've had a lot of nominations for people playing the same role and different iterations of famous characters like monarchs but this is significant in that realm. We've also had times where, like in Titanic, both old Rose and young Rose are nominated for playing the same character in different categories. So yes, there were some superlatives this year.
Yes, very interesting. And what a great performance to win, too. I think she's so good in West Side Story. And
she is. And she's not the same. That's the thing. You gotta, when you take on Rita Moreno gave probably one of the most iconic performances in history when she played Anita in the original West Side Story. And you had to go a different direction with the character because you couldn't copy that performance because it's just too ingrained in popular culture. And she did a great job of finding her own way with that character. So hats off to her. She's fantastic.
Yes. One of my other moments I wrote down was when Young Jun Yoon, who played the grandma in Minari, ended up winning with Troy Kotsur for supporting actor. Just her little intro was so perfect. She says, you know, I got mad when you said my name wrong last year. Now I have to pronounce all these hard names, lol. And then she signed to him and then he gave her a kiss. And then he had to hand the Oscar back to her so he could sign with his hands. And
do you know what I really liked about her in that moment? The Oscar handlers behind her, it started to kind of pull her off to the side, but and she stayed there, and it's because I realized at first I was like, oh, why maybe she doesn't know she needs to step back. And then I realized she stayed there because she knew she had to hold the Oscar so he could sign. And I thought that was so, it was so smart of her to be present enough in that moment to understand that she needed to create that accessibility for him.
Yeah.
You know, that was really beautiful. Yeah.
Love that. And yes, the only other moment I wanted to mention was just Lady Gaga and Liza Minnelli at the end. We're so sweet together. That was you didn't like it?
Oh no, I thought it was sweet. I was just sad because it's just sad seeing I mean, it's nice to see Liza, but it seems like she's had a tough time.
Yeah, absolutely true.
Yeah,
but yeah.
She's a and but she is a legend, and I hope we see her many more times. But I thought Lady Gaga did a very good job being with her in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I liked that we saw the three main Corleones, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
The guy behind cool them and the two. It was really a Godfather. It was interesting. They were honoring the 50th anniversary of the Godfather, but that was really a Godfather Part 2 reunion because Robert De Niro was not in the first Godfather. Right, yeah. And I thought they might try to get more. I thought they might. I was at Francis Ford Coppola's star on the Walk of Fame ceremony last week, which I was covering for the newspaper I write for, Beverly Press, beverlypress.com. Nice. And Talia Shire was also there. And I thought they might get her and a couple of the others who I would have loved to have seen Diane Keaton and, you know, like the full team. But it was nice to see them. And and to have that was a movie that really I liked that the fact that they reunited the Pulp Fiction team, and I thought they were really funny. But 28 years is didn't need to say the year for that one. I feel like nobody celebrates the 28th anniversary of anything. So I think,
because like even like White Men Can't Jump was 30, so it was like a nice round number.
Yes, it was a nice round number. I thought they were just stretching it by saying 28. But but then the moment itself was so fun.
Yeah.
The way that they played into it, you know.
Yeah.
So it was ended up being worth it. And I forgive them for that.
I like that Rachel Ziegler from West Side Story made a little joke about how she wasn't invited. Oh, because there was
a very good
too.
Joke.
Yeah, that was great.
She said, like, and 6 days ago, and this has been my dream since 6 days ago when I thought I'd never come.
Yeah, that was nice.
She has a great, I saw her at a Q&A for West Side Story. That's when I first saw the movie. And I think she's a star. I think she has a really bright future ahead of her because if you watch any interview with her, she's so funny. She has such a great attitude. I think she is, I think she's the next generation. Nice.
Shall we move on to some of the winners? We already talked about lead actress and supporting actress.
Nicole looked great as ever. I will say that
that's true. Yeah.
Nicole always somehow looks ethereal every time you see her.
It's true. Yeah.
It's like she just came down from the clouds.
I was thinking too, like Keith Urban just gets to sit right at the front of all these important film things.
But you know, Nicole gets to go to all the music things.
That's true.
With Nicole's always at the Grammys. She's always at the Country Music Awards. I bet you the two of them hit more award shows than any
has to be a
one else in the industry. Yeah. I feel bad for Diane Warren, I have to say. You know, this is her 13th nomination for Best Original Song.
Really?
I did not
know that. Wow.
And how do you think she feels when Billie Eilish gets nominated once and wins? Probably been so many times that's happened to her. And she's just like,
one of these days.
One of these days, I'm going to get this award. I bet she has many songwriting years left in her. She's good. And Reba, I bet you that's the first time Reba's probably been on the awards. And I thought she did a stellar job too.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not like, I didn't listen to a lot of country music growing up, but my wife did. And she's like, Reba looks great. Sounds great. So,
well, I thought they did a good job. I know that a lot of this was trying to appeal to as many people as possible. And they definitely did a good job of getting a cross section of stars from all walks of entertainment in there. And that is, the ceremony felt very starry. Mm-hmm. And I really hope the ratings get a big bounce, because I did think they put off a good show.
I'm very curious about that too. Yeah, because I thought the same thing, and I feel like I saw so many hot takes on Twitter that were like, the Oscars are terrible, and that's how I feel every year. It's like everyone's just crapping all over this, but like, I enjoyed myself watching it, even last year, which I didn't think was a great show. Like, I'm glad I watched the Oscars, and this was a fun time, you know. But yeah,
and if people are talking about them, that's the goal.
Yes,
they absolutely. They certainly. I guarantee time. You that there is enough material that people are going to be talking about this for the next 24 hours. So.
Absolutely.
That's ultimately what they want out of this. And hopefully, yeah. I hope in the end of that, beyond talking about the show, people then and go watch Coda and watch Power of the Dog and watch West Side Story and watch, I can't think of the title of a single Belfast. You know, I would go and watch these movies now because that is ultimately what this is all about. And I hope that people's interest was piqued enough, you know.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Best Picture as well, because it wasn't a total surprise, but a little bit of a surprise. And first of all, I just wanted to say that it's amazing how the whole Will Smith situation overshadowed so many things, including like Questlove's speech for Summer of Soul was actually great, but I was like so hard to like mentally be there, because that first of all, that film is incredible, and I'm so glad it won. But yeah, it was like, now this is all we're talking about. And the same thing for Best Picture, like, all I'd been thinking about was like, okay, Power of the Dog has had all this steam, and it's like, oh, it's going to win, it's going to win, it's going to win. And then the last month or whatever, Coda's kind of swooped in and got all this attention, all these other awards. And I was just thinking about, Netflix has been trying so hard to get a Best Picture for so many years, and now Apple TV has just swooped in and got it. Go ahead.
I have this theory about that. Right, and I think I talked about this. I may have talked to you about this before. I don't remember. But I think that there are a lot of people who are voters in the industry who don't like the way that Netflix does the theatrical game. I think that they, because, you know, Netflix doesn't only releases things in limited theaters, first of all. And they don't report box office numbers when they do that. And I think that those combinations of things are things that the industry doesn't take kindly to. I think that's a large reason why Roma lost a couple of years ago. And I think, especially right now, in a time where the industry's in a crisis point, if you will, where they're having to learn how to survive. And this is one of the reasons why I'm going to name check The Lost City again, because even though that's to many just a throwaway movies like that making money, if you like movies, that is such good news. Scream making money, such good news. If anytime we find anything that isn't a superhero movie and it makes a ton of money, the superhero movies making a ton of money are important too. I don't want to discount that. That may not be my thing, but we need things like that.
Let's take it for granted at this point. Yeah.
Yes. When you find something beyond the tent poles that are bringing in people to the theaters, that is such a huge deal, because that means that what we love about movies has hope and can survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think Netflix not playing that game and being involved in so much into streaming, but Apple is also a streaming platform. They just did a more traditional release pattern with Coda, which I think that, and the fact that it's a feel good movie.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think we needed a feel good movie this year. And I do really like Coda. It was, you know, by no means my favorite of those 10 films, but I thought it was good. And I'm glad that I'm happy for it to have attention. And I tweeted this the other day, but I also low key have a crush on, Marley Matlin. So very, very happy. She's successful.
I liked her dress too. Oh, you did?
Finally.
Oh my God.
Had to take a
break. She's so great on The West Wing too. She has such a great arc on that show. And she comes in and out the whole time. Mm-hmm. So, Marley also looked, liked her red dress. I love it when someone really dresses for a moment, and both her and that red is such a statement color, you know?
And then the director of Coda too, she made a joke about her like disco ball looking dress.
Oh, but she looked, I mean, I loved it. It was such a good look. It was, those were definitely among the best,
the best outfits of the night, you know, which is the other thing people always end up talking about.
Yeah. Were there any others that stood out to you?
I thought Jessica Chastain, I really liked her multicolored outfit.
Kristen Stewart very much was matched looking, her speech. I just saw some images of her on the red carpet.
She was looking
Kristen
cool. Looking
good. Yeah, with her shorts. I saw a funny
tweet. She looked cool. It said, yeah.
Kristen Stewart should win for best live action shorts because she's wearing. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I'm stealing that joke from good. Someone. I'll find the original That's joke and good. Credit someone later. But
I'm gonna read. Yeah. I'm going to.
That's pretty good.
Oh my gosh! I just flipped by on Instagram. A shot of Barbara's two Oscars. Anyway, I thought it was just such a, you know, the table thing was interesting. I haven't mentioned that. The they brought back the tables like they had last year at the train station.
Yeah, interesting. Just for like the front section, and then the back was.
Yeah, still... I don't know if I loved it or not. I kind of like the. I think I like there being an audience and you run down the aisle and, I think I like that.
To some people to get on the stage when they weren't supposed to. So there's that aspect of it, but maybe
that
would have happened anyway, but
I wonder how, like, I mean, like there were certain stars who were probably very aware of the fact that they were going to be on camera.
Yeah.
The entire time. Mm-hmm. Because they literally were just off stage. Man, there's a lot I'm still processing here.
Yeah, absolutely. quite an Oscars.
It was definitely a show that had lots of conversation points. And I think there would have been lots of conversation points
without the
Will Smith incident. I think people still, there would have been, people would have been laughing about,
excuse me.
It's a long show. They would have been laughing about Regina Hall's joke, you know, they would have about the Regina Hall's bit with the COVID testing, you know. I think that there were a few moments to take out of that. And to me it was the best show we've had in a few years, I think.
Yeah. I feel that way too.
Since the last time, at least the last time we had a host, I can't remember.
Yeah. Was it 2 or 3 years without one? That has always felt a little less because even though we didn't, as you said, we had less hosts, that what you're saying about, like, it's better to want more hosts than to have too much. I definitely felt like, oh, we have hosts again, and they're jumping back in. But it still did a good job of,
keeping. And they made jokes that landed, you know?
Yeah. They were genuinely funny, like, almost the whole time. Yeah.
Yes, they were. They knew. They were clearly people who understood how to work an audience. And that really served the moment. And I had felt like that was lacking last year and particularly last year, but in the moments where we didn't have all those, like those ceremonies where we didn't have a host, it does provide a certain level of connectivity to the show. Mm-hmm. It gives you a through line. And to see the same people throughout just makes it have some uniformity to it. Yeah. And
that's true. Like this one was long, but last year's felt so much longer, I think, because of the lack of clips and the lack of hosts and how weird it was.
Humor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Humor. So. I mean, like the problem with last year is I think the Oscars got weighed down by the need to say something. Important because of the unique times that we were living through. And what they missed last year that they got this year is that sometimes when you're living through tough times, you need something that takes you away from it. And there's a way that you can tip your hat and pay reverence to, like, the crisis in the Ukraine. Which they did a good job of taking a pause for, without detracting. You can walk and chew gum at the same time. basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a lesson for living life too. Like, you can never get so weighed down in the tragedies of things going on that you don't lose hope and humor.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that the Oscars understood that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's probably a good enough place to wrap things up too. Thank you so much, Rance, for joining once again to bring your many wonderful insights on the Oscars. And I'm very curious to continue watching the news and how discussions around this all go. But what a night it's been. Well, it is late there, it's even later here, so I should probably hop off and say goodbye so we can cut it there, and we'll talk to you next time.
Talk to you next time. Next Oscars or sooner.
There you go. Huge thanks to Rance. That was a wonderful chat, and he's always so full of Oscar knowledge. Huge thanks to Christopher Pistole as well for sharing about South by Southwest. And as a reminder, the extended version of the Chris interview is available on Patreon. Also on Patreon, the video version of both of these interviews, if video is more your speed. That's it for this time, but stay tuned. The plan for the next episode is a film review of something new. I'm not exactly sure what just yet, still narrowing it down, but it's between a few things. And I'm also planning to start a new series focused on classic film with none other than Rance Collins. So if you liked what you heard from Rance on this episode, stay excited because I'm planning to have him around for a few more episodes. And with that, thank you for listening to Arthouse Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes now, and you can hear those all in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage, or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. That can actually be a t-shirt or a hoodie or a mug or a journal, just about anything. We've got some new designs there. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That's at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, Andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.